Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everybody. It's James from the Queen Comedy Podcast. Before we jump into this episode, I want to remind you about our book club. That's right. We have a Queen Comedy Podcast book club. You can click the link in the show notes to pick up the book. This month's book is Born Standing Up by Steve Martin. Great book, one of my favorites. So we will be discussing that on a later episode in this month, and we probably will be doing it live on YouTube if you guys want to do it that way. If not, no big deal, but we're still trying to figure that out. But please go and order the book on Amazon and the link that's in the show notes. It will help the podcast. It will help us keep this going. We appreciate it, and you'll have an amazing book to read. All right, have a great one, and let's get to the show.
You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James, and today I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Luke LaCoy. Luke?
That's my name. Hello.
I'm excited that you're wearing camo today, because we have a veteran, an Army veteran. So, but I'm glad that we could see you, because I was nervous that I wouldn't be able to see you with all that camo on.
It was an intentional, and I'm glad it wasn't too camo for.
It's funny because there's a meme that I saw the other day that it's a lady and a man sitting at a table eating dinner, and the meme says like, oh, it's so sad she has to eat alone, and it's because the dude's in all camo from like head to toe. And I was dying laughing. I'm like, that's such a funny meme to like make. But I love those kind of memes, like where, you know, I also love John Cena memes. Like, I don't know if you know John Cena, but like he does like the you can't see me. So I'll do this with my kids. We'll be in the toy aisle, and we'll walk past WWE action figures, and I'll be like, man, I wish they had a John Cena. And then my kids will be like, he's right there. I'm like, where? I can't see him, you know? And they're like, get out of here. So that's what kind of dad I am, guys, just so you know. So speaking of veterans, everyone knows I'm a veteran, but we also have a great veteran who's here with us today. He's an Iraq War veteran. He's very funny. He has an amazing special called Fat Veteran. I mean, he's hilarious. I watched it, and I also listened to it in my car. Please welcome the very funny, the very talented Josh Novy. Josh, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks, James. And Luke, something's wrong with you. You're just a floating head. I don't understand what's happening. I'm very scared for you.
I love those camo jokes and memes. They're always just so funny to me, because it's like, oh gosh, come on, guys. But you know,
it's so silly, and it's just something like it doesn't hurt anybody.
Right.
That's like my perfect humor is to like silly and then doesn't hurt anybody, and dad can say it again and again. And it never gets old.
The John Cena joke. My kids hate it, but I'm like, this is always funny to me. I don't know why, but it's great. So you're an Iraq War veteran. First of all, thank you for your service, because I grew up outside Fort Hood. So
thank you for yours. Yeah, you've probably been through more stuff. I was stationed at Fort Hood.
Were you really?
I was stationed at Fort Hood. I was in 1st Medical Brigade there. And I was stationed at Fort Hood. Boy, that place is... if you don't know, Luke, the name is called The Great Place, and that is an ironic oxymoron name if there ever is one. Tell you what.
Yeah, it is the largest army base in the contiguous United States. So it's in landmass. Is it the world too?
No, at least in the free world. They don't know about it.
So I actually grew up mostly in Temple, Texas, but my grandma worked in Killeen, and then we also lived in Nolanville for a while. So if you're familiar with
those places.
Yeah. So so that was my childhood in Central Texas, living in that area. I'm actually going to go back in July. I'm going to take my kids because they've never seen Texas. They've never been to where I grew up. It's going to be earth-shattering for them going from Los Angeles to Central Texas. Their heads are going to explode, so it's going to be great. That's awesome. So Fort Hood, where else were you stationed at?
That was it. So I was a medic, and then so I was at Fort Hood, and then Iraq, and then back to Fort Hood, and then that was it. So
you're like, that's enough.
I did 4 years in the Army, and about 3 years into it, me and the Army were done with each other, and
that happened
about the time I got back. I think I spent like 6 months back home, back at Fort Hood before I got out. But yeah, it was a mutual, you know, thing where like, this isn't working out. But so I just stayed till the end of my enlistment and got out.
My first exposure to the Army when I was a kid was somebody gave me the poster of the guy on the horse with the axe. What is that called? What is the thing called? You know what I'm talking about?
You're talking about Iron Maiden?
No. It's a Frank, you know, like heavy metal, like the heavy metal stuff. But the Army used to have one of their squadrons, their mascot was
Silver Knights.
Yeah, it's a dude on the horse with the blade and whatever and stuff. That was my first exposure to the military, and I was like, oh, this is awesome. They like do crazy cool stuff.
Here's the thing about the Army. I don't know how the Navy is, but every Army thing is all about knights, you know?
Yeah.
So the Army itself is the Black Knights, and that's like the jump team. And then there's like the, you know, then there's the Silver Knights, and then there's like the, you know, Aluminum Knights. And you're like, there's too many knights.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is every in the Navy? What is everyone's mascot?
We're just sailors. There's not really a mascot. I mean, the Seabees have like the Seabee thing, and then the Seals have the Seals. But like on the ships or whatever, I mean, like there's, I think it's dolphins for the Submariners, and then, you know, just there's not a lot. Like it doesn't. We don't have that kind of thing. Like we're not cool.
Oh man, you're missing out though. We had mascots in every company and my medical company, it was the 556 Area Support Medical Company, and we were the Cobras.
Nice.
You know, like my training company, I remember I was an Alpha, and one of them I was a Gator. You know, like that. Like there was always some sort of like very manly
animal
that we all attached to.
So how did you get started in the Navy, like, or in speaking in stand-up from the Army? Like, did you go from the Army to stand-up, or did you go to like college? Did you do regular jobs after? How'd that work out?
Sort of a mixture of both. So I while I was deployed, I realized that, you know, sometimes you have bad days, you know, and especially overseas and during wartime. And so I found that at the end of bad days, is that we'd go out to the smoke pit, and then there'd just be like a group of people around me. And I was making them laugh, telling jokes and doing stupid things. And that's kind of how it started. And then enough people told me that I had something, you know, they said, yeah, you have something there. You got to do something with that. Then I started to believe them. And then, so I got out of the Army. This is 2009 is when I got out, and I went to college in Florida. And that's where I started doing comedy for reals. Cause I went to, I didn't, you know, I don't know if, cause I didn't know how to do comedy. I had no idea how to do. I thought you just were Seinfeld, and that was it. Right. I had no idea. So I go and I go to this comedy show, and it's like local guys. And I go there, and I was like, oh, these guys are terrible. I could do this. and then the next week I signed up, and I've been addicted ever since.
You have one of the best jokes, the Army medic joke, where you talk about saving the dude's life, and you're like riding on the back of it, and then all of a sudden you're like, this is the most heroic I ever have looked in my life, and no one's here to witness it. I'm like, oh dude, I know how you feel. Like,
did you have one of those moments? We have all had those moments.
Oh yeah. Like, we did. So I was in the Navy from 99 to 2003. So right at 9/11, all that time frame, we went to the Persian Gulf pre 9/11 and then post 9/11. Post 9/11 though, we were like guns out, ready to go, because our sister ship was the USS Cole that got blown up. So we went back. We were like guns out, ready to go. And I just remember being all geared up and thinking, I look awesome. Nobody there to check it out. No, you know, machine guns, a rifle, a pistol, gear on. I'm like, oh, the man. And it's like, nobody's there to watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the worst.
It's the worst. That's the worst part about, and this is absolutely true. The week after that happened to me, they're the CNN or Time photographers were there, and they got some other guy doing the same thing, and then like they put him on like the cover, and like I was like, you, I was so mad. I was like, I did it first. That's mine.
That's the best. So, are you still in Florida now, or did you move somewhere else? Or is that where
No. So I moved to Florida. I'm originally from Iowa, and then got out the Army, moved to Florida. Spent a couple years back in Iowa to be closer to family. And then a couple years ago, comedy was kind of taking off for me, and so I moved to Los Angeles. And then about a year and a half ago, I decided to move to Phoenix because I have a fiance now, and we wanted to move in together. And Los Angeles is not a place to raise children. So I tell you what, it's been a journey.
So you've been doing comedy for, if I'm doing my math right,
11 years. I'd say 11 years, probably close to 11 years.
Okay. And so,
but here's a question. Do we take a year off?
I don't know. That's a good, no, that's a good question. Luke, do we take a year off?
I mean, taking a couple negative years for last year. So
yeah,
seriously, I feel like this 1 year of the pandemic is going to set us back like 2 years. Really. It's like a 2 year setback because you're gonna have to relearn how to get on stage again, relearn how to do shows, how to do all this stuff. Because right now everybody's doing Zoom stuff and it's like, oh yeah, that's the worst. I mean, have you done Zoom shows?
Oh, I've done so many Zoom shows. And I tell you, it's been an absolute blessing for me. Especially with corporate Zoom shows they've kept me alive this past year.
That's awesome.
And they're, you know, they don't pay much, but you can, you know, pays just enough to make ends meet. So it's been an absolute blessing to do the Zoom shows. Of course, at the beginning of it, I was very upset because of course I lost like a year and a half of work overnight. So
yeah, that was the biggest blow, I think, to comedians, and especially now it's going to be a bigger blow for comedians, especially in markets like New York or LA, where headliners are going to get spots because they haven't been out doing stuff. So they're going to get spots, and anyone who's not a headliner, not been on TV, not whatever, is going to have a hard time struggling to get spots. You'll be able to do open mics or whatever, but getting spots on shows is not going to be easy for the next year, 2 years, I think, really.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about you.
We're in LA.
I know you're in LA. And then when I my dry bar special came out, the two days, I depending on how you look at it, the 2 days or the day before lockdown happened, before it was announced. So I had this big plan. I was like, okay, this is happening. This is coming out. It's gonna give a push to my career, and then I'm gonna go out and I can work on new, because I work on new material as I'm on the road and I'm generating things. And I was like, all right, by the time it gets to that point, I'll have another couple hours that I can then push down and work with. And then I was like, and then that happened. And I was like, I guess I'm just going to tell old jokes now. What I'm going to do. I'm a hack. That's what I am.
Well, you have to. I mean, the thing is, like, even during this, one of our friends went to go do dry bar, and I had been asked to do dry bar, but my plan was last year to finish building my set so that I would be ready for dry bar. Well, of course, you know what happened. I was still writing, but those jokes aren't ready. Like, they're there. They're like ready to go on stage, but they're not ready to be presented on a special at all. So
I mean, have you seen some of the dry bar specials?
I know, but here's my thing. I want to put out the best possible thing I can. I don't want to do something where, yes, the joke will be funny, but it could have been 10 times funnier, right? And so especially if that's a calling card, like you can use that to get more work, right? People know that you were on dry bar, they're gonna watch it. And if your jokes are B jokes, yeah, it's funny, but then they're going to go, well, that's kind of meh. I could go get this guy who's way funnier because he had the year to process it. But, you know.
That's kind of the hope is that, we know we're not going to be making, $1 million off the dry bar itself, which is fine. So I actually booked two corporate shows off of my dry bar when I filmed it. So there's people in the audience and they booked me and I came out, to do shows for them. Other than that, it's just, you know, it's just people being like, hey, you're funny.
Yeah.
Cool, thanks. Follow me? They're like, nah, I'm okay.
Luke, did you have a question?
I watched your special. It was super funny. So, yeah, it was great. I laughed a lot. I was kind of wondering, like, I guess some of your material can be considered, I don't know what the right word is. Pro-gun, I guess. Let's put it that way.
When I talk about how I like guns?
Yeah. do you ever get like any backlash from any of that? Or is it kind of like depending on like where you're performing at? Or I'm just kind of wondering. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great question. Whenever I do something, I'm like, especially like something like that, I knew that I was kind of playing to a conservative crowd. Mm-hmm. And I know the dry bar, the people that tend to watch dry bar are also tend to be very conservative. And I also wrote that liberal joke. I wrote that liberal mm-hmm. joke the week before I went on dry bar specifically for that audience.
Which was hilarious, by the way.
Yeah, thanks. But I was like, 100%, I will pander. I don't care.
You're my kind of guy.
Yeah. But that also tends to be my fan base tends to be not necessarily super conservative right wing, mm-hmm. but sort of centered on the right, just like normal everyday parents and blue collar workers kind of tend to be like my people. Mm-hmm. Just finding ways to be funny and to talk about things about like guns and talk about PTSD in a way that doesn't push people away is very mm-hmm. important to me. And that's kind of one of my missions in comedy.
Cool. That's awesome. I love that. I love the title is Fat Veteran. Like that's just such a veteran thing to say too, right? Because if you watch like Matt Best or like some of those guys like that, you think like jacked up, tattooed, big dude, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
those guys.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I know. And then everyone's like, that's what people think of. And then you go to the VA and like we're waddling in there to get our blood pressure read. And then you're like, what? What's going on?
It's a dude with a Duck Dynasty beard smoking a cigarette, yeah. Wearing cargo shorts and a half t-shirt, you know, and you're like, that's what veterans look like. That's what 90% of them look like.
That's what veterans are. We're just like, I got out because I used to run a lot in the Army, and I don't know about the name, but we used to run a lot. And like, I remember like one time I ran 12 miles and I got in trouble for being slow. Like that's, I didn't stop. There was no stopping whatsoever. And so I got out and I was like, you know, I'm taking a break from running and then I'm going to come back to it. Haven't.
Yeah. No, in the Navy, I think if you run 12 miles, they automatically make you a Navy SEAL. I think that's how that works.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. They're just like, oh, you ran 12 miles? You could do that? Cool. Yeah, you're a SEAL now. Like, that's what they do. But the regular Navy, they don't run. They don't do any of that kind of stuff. So that's
– lucky. Yeah. I should have gotten Navy. Oh, well.
Yeah. No, well, my dad and my grandfathers were all three in the Army. Mm-hmm. And one of my grandfathers is also in the Navy. And they basically told me like, you can join the Air Force or the Navy, no Army, no Marine Corps. And I was like, well, mm-hmm. I like dolphins. So let's go to the Navy, you know? Right. It's like, it just seems like the right way to go.
That's what I tell people too. They're like, should I join the Army? No. Navy. Go Navy.
Yeah. Navy's I know Air Force is like the easiest because they get like dorm. Like my brother was in the Air Force, they get dorms. They had like a maid come clean up after him and stuff. And like their mess hall was like going to like a Vegas buffet. It's like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
yeah. So, but I don't want that. I need a little bit of like resistance. Somebody like trying to push back on me. So I was like, I'll go. You know, the Navy seemed like the way to go. Plus, I wanted to be a Navy SEAL when I was a kid. So I was like, one of those things.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that movie with Charlie Sheen.
Oh, I remember that. I remember they were getting ready. He was getting married, and then everyone's beepers went off.
Yeah,
and they're like, they don't have time to just to do.
Say I do, right? Yeah. And then he dies on the mission. Sorry, guys. Spoiler alert. It's a 1986 movie. Okay. Yeah.
Listen, everybody knows if there's a kid in the movie, he dies. Yeah. If there's a pregnant lady, she dies. Right.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that.
If there's a dude about to get married and he's not able to get married, guess what? He's mm-hmm. gonna die.
Yeah.
That's how it works. I think he was like the doc too. I think he was like the medical guy. And he dies and you're like, oh man, this sucks. So during that time from the Army to going to stand up, like, what was that journey like for you to get now where you're on the road and you're making a living in comedy? How long did that kind of take?
I tell you that, so I started comedy in like 2010. And then I probably went full time in 2015 is when I went full time into comedy.
That's fast.
Yeah. And I credit 100% of this is there's a thing called the CCA, the Christian Comedians Association. Mm-hmm. And so every year, people get together, well, except for the last couple of years for a pandemic. But so every year people from around the country get together and we share ideas and we talk about things and we make, you know, so 2015, I want to say it was 2015, maybe 2016. There's a guy that did, he's in actually from California. He did this breakout session about how to get more bookings and how to work and do all this stuff. And literally all I did was I wrote down everything he said. Sorry, those are my dogs. Those are my little puppies. They're like little tech. So I just wrote down everything he said and I put it into use. And so that was at the beginning of June. That was like June, the first weekend of June. And then by the end of July, I had booked out like 7-8 months of my calendar. And I was like, I don't have to go back to work.
That's amazing. All right. Can you share that with us?
I will absolutely. So that's one thing I love about like these types of things is that, you know, people talk about like, you know, they're like, that's my piece of pie. Don't take my piece of pie. I'm like, you know what? But if we work together, we can create a giant piece of pie and then we can all share. Like we'd have a bigger piece of pie from a bigger pie.
Thank you. That's what I keep trying to tell comedians in LA. And everyone's like, well, if I share my thing with you, then I'm not going to have it. You're like, dude, then you're just building more stuff. If I share something, you share something, we all build and then everybody wins, you know, like no one gets anywhere by themselves, you know?
Yeah.
So
those things like you know, people, I know, I don't know how you guys feel about comedy classes. I only know like one person who I think puts on a good comedy class. Rick Roberts.
I keep wanting to take his class. Okay, so I've taken, since I started comedy, I've taken 1, 2, 3, 4. I've taken 4 comedy classes because I'm a nerd and I like to learn stuff. So that's So I've done, I forgot the guy's name. One guy who, I forgot his name. And then Steve Roy, who has Killer Stand Up.
Oh, yeah, he's got a great one.
Yeah, that one's good. And then I did one with one of my friends, Paul Moomjean, and then I've done, and then I'm in a class with Robert G. Lee right now.
I love Robert.
Yeah, Robert's the man.
Ask Robert about me. I love Robert.
I'll see him tomorrow night. So
I'll be like, oh, I was talking to Josh yesterday. Yeah, I love Robert.
So and I do want to take Rick's thing, and I'm not sure which one I'm going to take because I can't really take the in-person one, but I want to take like one of the 3-tier things or whatever. But
yeah, just reach out to him and like he's so nice. His class, and I'm sure Robert's is, that's phenomenal. I totally forgot about Robert's too. So yeah. I apologize. If Robert is listening right now, if not.
He might actually.
Robert G. Lee's class is phenomenal. In fact, I last time, I think I gave some money so people could go do for the scholarship fund or whatever. So Robert G., he's absolutely amazing. I would take all his advice and then forget everyone else's. That's what I would do.
But no, his advice has been super invaluable to me. He's helped me with so many things, so I'm grateful. He's helped me build the set so I can get ready for Dry Bar. Because, like I said, I had the opportunity. I passed it off to somebody else who I knew was ready and had been doing more shows. Our friend David Studebaker, who's an amazing comedian, he did it. He did it during COVID. So he went up there and did like a half-packed crowd. But I guess it went really well. So he's very happy with it. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff is like, I like learning from people. I think that, and that's what this podcast is learning from people as much as we possibly can.
So, yeah.
And on that note, Luke, did you have a question? Cause I see your face like,
sorry, Luke, you're just a floating head down there.
the CCA conference, was that one in Nashville? The one that you're talking about?
So the one that I was taught, the one that changed my life was in Atlanta. So it's all the same. It's the same people. And then, so what happens every couple of years, it changes locations.
I was just wondering, I was in the Nashville one. So I was just, I was wondering if it was like, maybe we were in the same room together at one point.
I bet we were in the same room together at some point in time. It gets a little hectic when we do those things because you know, everyone, there's like all the new people and all the old people, and everyone's trying to one up each other, you know, because it's a comedy festival.
Well, we were going to go, Luke, we were supposed to go to the one in Texas. Mm-hmm. Is that the one that got canceled? Luke and I were going to drive. Like, we're going to drive to, was it Tucson to go do stand-up? We had some dates set, and we're going to go to, like, three different places, and then we're going to go to end up at CCA. Huh. And, like, COVID murdered everything, and we're like, come on, man. Like, we're doing stuff. We're trying to get out in the world, and this is what happened. So,
We'll talk off the record. I'll give you guys whatever help I can.
Perfect. Thank you.
I don't want to give it to your people because you don't want people to, you know, then all of a sudden they're learning. That's stupid.
Well, what, I mean, if you were helping a comedian out, like saying a brand new guy who wants to start comedy, guy or girl, doesn't matter, who wants to start comedy, what would be your biggest tip or piece of advice for a new comic?
This is, and I wish I would take my own advice now, right? So this is my best advice that I can give, is that when I am the most productive in comedy, I write 10 jokes a day, right? So that's when I do 10 jokes a day. The first 8 are terrible. The last 2 are what I'm actually working on because I'm trying to get in that headspace. So just writing, you can write the first 8 jokes and be like, why is the flower red? And you're like, I don't know, because butt stinks. You know, like that doesn't make any sense. It's not funny. But you're just getting yourself in the headspace. So those last 2 jokes are the ones that you actually want to work on and get in that brain space to make a difference in that part.
You would not believe how many other people that are successful comedians say you need to write every day. You need to write jokes every day. I mean, Jerry Seinfeld, right? That's his big thing, is never break the chain. And that's what we always preach, is learn to write a joke. The first thing you should do is learn to write a simple setup punchline joke.
My favorite way to teach people how to write a joke is you say 185 somethings walk into a bar, and the bartender says, why are you here? And then you say something punny about that. So like, it'd be like, 185, trees walk into the bar, and the bartender says, you need to leave, you know? But I think that's like a very simple, like, this teaches you structure. Like, hey, this is X plus Y equals, you know, funny.
No, that's exactly right. You have to know that. And that's the thing, is we as comedians, we want to think, oh, it's art. It's art. And it is art, but it's also a little bit of science and a little bit of math. You got to put these things together and you get it.
It's public speaking. It's a very different world, because you have to be funny. You have to be entertaining. You have to be original, and you have to present it in a package that folks will be enamored by.
Yeah. What is the hardest part of comedy for you? Like, what do you find to be the hardest part of comedy?
Waiting to get booked.
Oh, that's a good
one. That's my worst part. I hate it.
Now, do you book yourself, or do you have like a manager or somebody that helps book you?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, so I have 8 booking agents and managers and all those other people that do booking stuff. But then I also have, you know, I also do stuff on my own. So right now I'm kind of on my own. After a pandemic, because it sounds stupid, but we're back at square one. I'm back at 2014 is where I'm back at right now, career wise. And so now we're working on, I'm working with some people to try to get some tour dates booked. And it's definitely, it's difficult, but it definitely reminds you that you're not special in any way and nobody cares. So that's, but in a good way.
Right. Well, no, I would say you're special, because you're funny. You bring happiness to people. You bring joy to people. You share a story. You share something that is traumatic to most people of war, and you bring that to stage and make people laugh about it. That is something special, because you are, whether you realize or not, you're impacting people in a positive way, where they feel like, oh my gosh, my life could be worse, right? I could be in a war zone holding my hands on top of a dude bleeding out, and if trying to find a way to make this humorous, but I'm just stuck in a cubicle all day, that's not that bad, you know?
Yeah. And see, so here's the fun thing, is that because I was a medic, everyone wants to hear stories. And that's like the most family-friendly story I have. And like, so that's kind of how that's how that joke story came about, because I was like, well, okay, let me think of all the things. Okay, this one's not as inappropriate. So...
90% of the things you do in the military are inappropriate. And no one, if you told that to somebody, they'd be like, that is terrible. Why would you do that? And you're like, I don't know. That's just what we do. You know, like,
yeah.
nobody ever gets it. You're like I've told people stories and I've got these looks of like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, what's wrong? What is wrong with me? I don't know.
Well, what's wrong with you? Why don't you think that's funny? That's funny.
It's just a fraternity with guns. That's what the military is.
Yeah. Oh, I love. See, Luke. See, it brings back. It's a fraternity. Imagine it's just like a big sleepover, but with guns.
Yeah. That's all it is. Luke, any more questions?
Kind of. Well, yeah. Going back like pre-pandemic. How was the comedy scene in Arizona?
So I didn't really know the comedy scene before the pandemic in Arizona. I got here literally a week or two before shutdown happened.
Wow.
And I got to go do one comedy show and then that was it for me. But I have actually been going back out recently because things are open. So I'm trying to work on new material. So I have been going out to open mics and it's pretty awesome. I'm telling you right now, I didn't think it would be, but there's some really good clubs here and you can actually get real good stage time, not just stage time, but like you can get good stage time with audiences, with feedback, and you can get longer than the 3 minutes that you're gonna get in LA. So, you know, there's tons of them that you get 7 to 10 minutes, a couple you get 15 minutes here. So it's for developing. I think that Phoenix is a pretty good place for people to go.
Cool.
Where'd you start out in Florida? What city was it? Orlando or something like that?
Gainesville, Florida.
Okay. So where is that? Is that Southern Florida?
No, it's Northern Florida. So it's north of Orlando. It's like an hour and a half north of Orlando.
Okay. Perfect. Did you ever go and perform in Orlando? I know that's a big comedy scene too.
Yeah. They had a great comedy scene there. I used to go down there, a couple times a month, at least go down and do like they have like a, well, of course back then I wasn't good. So I would just do the open mics at like Austin's Coffee Shop. And, it's really fun to see how people have gotten better and see how people are, making a name for themselves. Like Preacher Lawson, he's from that area. So
he did my birthday show when I turned 35. I started comedy 9 months before I did my birthday show. That was my goal for my 35th birthday, is I wanted to do stand up. And so I had met Preacher before that, some open mics, and we laughed and had fun or whatever. And I told him, I remember saying to him, you laugh like Eddie Murphy. And I love it. Like, that's one of the funniest things about him, because he laughs like that. That's his laugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we kind of became friends. And then for my 35th birthday, he came and headlined my birthday party. And it was crazy. I wrote 30 minutes of material to perform 9 months after starting stand up, and about, I actually performed 27 minutes on stage because I rushed stuff, obviously.
Uh-huh.
I'm in LA. And about 15 minutes of that was actually okay material.
Oh, so that's good odds.
Yeah. It was not bad. And everyone thought I was insane. They're like, no, you should not be doing that.
That's the general rule. And then whenever someone asks me about like, if they're just starting out, I say, just do like, you ever, you know, because like, except for like Los Angeles, you get 3 minutes. Yeah. That's it. That's just the normal. But everywhere else, it's 5 minutes. And what I tell anyone that's just starting out, I say, just do 3 minutes. Don't try to fill 5 minutes. Yeah. Get good at that 3 minutes and do that for a few months, and then do 5 minutes, and then just build on your skills and your sets.
Yeah. I think I was still naive in that first 9 months, because I did the Queen Comedy Challenge, like,
oh,
right,
yeah, yeah,
right before that. Yeah. And I did that, and I got good feedback, even though I hadn't even been doing stand up a year. So I got probably like, I was probably naive and like a little overconfident, like, hey, people said nice stuff about my comedy, so I'm gonna be great, you know, like it was that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's how Luke and I became friends, like
you guys both did the Clean Comedy Challenge?
Actually, we
met, I just came to watch James.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and then we became friends and started doing this podcast so we could figure out comedy.
You know, a lot of people, you know, bash on it, but I will say that some of the best career opportunities I've had have come from people that I've met through the Clean Comedy Challenge. Not necessarily from winning it or anything like that, but from meeting people. Yeah. I've had some amazing career opportunities that have come from that. So I'm all about it. Give Leslie your money. Yeah. You know, she wants it and she'll take it. So
Well, and she gives you value for everything you do, because there are classes there. You learn stuff. You get mentored, because they give you like 3 or 4 feedback sessions. So mm-hmm. I still have mine on my phone from like when Robert G. Lee berated me about a joke about my wife. And he's like, you can't tell jokes like that. People are going to think you hate your wife. And I was like, I'm not saying that. He's like, it doesn't matter. That's what they think. We're all thinking that right now, that you hate your wife. And I was like, oh my gosh.
So, Robert's just like,
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he went hard on me. Like, he was like laying into me. I have it recorded. I want to play it for him someday when I'm like, if we do a show on the road together. I'm just going to play the whole thing and be like, this is what you yelled at me in a room together. It's just mm-hmm. you and me, and you yelled these things at me. So.
That's Robert, though. You know, he cares, and he's, you know, he'll say exactly what he thinks no matter what. you love him or you don't. And
no, I love him.
So
yeah, I love him. So Josh, is there anything you want to plug? Where can people find you? Where can they find your comedy? Where can they find your special? All that kind of stuff.
I have a podcast with me and 3 other Phoenix comics. It's called The Morning Laugh. It's on Thursday mornings, every morning at 6 a.m. Arizona time. So right now it's Pacific time, and then in a couple of months it'll be Mountain Standard time. So but we have every Thursday, and that's a podcast. We have a video cast on that one too. It's called The Morning Laugh, and we're actually I am not gonna say it out loud. Well, I'll say it, but I'm not gonna say it like where, but we are actually we're booking the tour for that show, for that podcast, and it's looking really good. So I don't get excited about much, but I'm very excited about that, the opportunities coming from that one. So that, and then just follow me, you know, at Josh Novy on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Snapchat, OnlyFans, whatever you find, whatever you find my name, just follow it.
It'll be odd if there is somebody Josh Novy on there, it's not you on some of those things.
I honestly thought about like doing one and then like just doing like mundane tasks on it. Cause I found out, cause I'm not a porn guy. I don't know how to say that clean. Sorry. Right. You can loop it out. I saw this article about like one of the biggest, guys on this website. And he's just a guy that, teaches people how to do, home repair. Like in the middle, like it'll just show up and he's like, here's how to change the light bulb. Here's how to fix the leaky sink. And then like, and I found, and I read this article, and this guy's getting like millions of views just cause where he uploads. And it's so funny.
Oh my gosh. Your podcast is with Mike James and Brian Kahatsu.
Yeah.
Dude, those guys are awesome. We love them.
Yeah. Have they been on your show?
Yeah. Yeah. Mike and Brian have both been on the show.
Yeah, and Chris Wineland is super funny. So all three of them have recently done their dry bars. They haven't come out yet. So all four of us are right now. I'm the headliner because I'm famous. I'm more famous, you know. But, soon they will be more famous than me. So, it's like one of the funnest things I've gotten to do ever. It's just. Wake up and I drink a bunch of coffee and then we goof off for an hour. And it's pretty awesome.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to start listening to that. Cause I love those guys. They gave us some great advice before. So that's perfect. And yeah, they did say that the Phoenix scene was blowing up. So that's amazing. So
yeah,
tell them hi. Maybe we'll have to do a thing where you guys come on and all four of you at once and do something.
I was going
to
say it'll be a chaos, but
that's okay. That'd be awesome.
We can do a clean comedy, morning laugh mashup. You know, like crossover sitcom episode.
That would be awesome. We would love to do that because we love those guys.
Is that Zach Morris and Steve Urkel? It's the best episode ever.
All right, Luke, where can everybody find you at?
Luke LaCoy. I'm not on the questionable.
You're not on OnlyFans. That's
right. It's like, if you want a pen pal, Luke's available. He's doing calligraphy lately, and he looks forward to talking to your grandmothers.
He actually would be good with people's grandmothers, to be honest with you. He'd be great with that.
Ladies love the curly hair. And, yeah. Can't keep their hands to themselves.
Old ladies are like, you're so cute. You're so adorable, Luke. Let me pinch your cheeks. All right. You can find me at jamesdkrebson.com, or you can go to comedypreneur.com. Please check out, you already know, the monologue joke podcast I do every week, the Comedypreneur Show, which is great, more advice and tips on how to make money as a comedian. And then check out WTF Happened in America this week. It's the show that I produce with two Australian guys who are very funny. It is not clean, so just be aware of that. They say a lot of bad stuff, but they're hilarious and fun. And also, thank you so much for joining us. Please like, subscribe, please leave us feedback, and thank you. Have a great one. Bye.